That was a fantastic reading. I think I'm not quite sure if we've had such a lively reading from a guest author, actually. I think some of our students have been quite good, and we often sort of say, that, you know, some of our students read a bit better, but this was a fantastic performance. We really enjoyed it. I think you probably noticed that. Before I hand out to the audience as a whole, I think I'd like to kick something off with a line from the story that you've just read, because when I read it, it really struck me as very interesting about this collection as a whole. When you talk about the events of your protagonist's life, it's not a story, it's just a list. I think that's probably a little slightly inaccurate quotation, but I think it gets to the point. It made me reflect a little bit on the rest of the collection and made me think about what you're trying to do with stories and whether you're doing something which is a bit different from plot, from narrative. Is it, well, let's just throw it to you. What would you say makes a story in a story that you write? What are you trying to aim for?
I do remember cheating. Are you familiar with the Arvin Foundation?
Yeah, very.
Yeah, thought it would be. Yeah, I remember tutoring a course with a very old and distinguished Scottish writer, of whom you will never have heard, which was part of the problem, turned up, and I sort of said hello, and that was about it. And the second thing he said was, I think we're very different types of writer. I said, oh, why is that? Oh, wise and old, wrinkly, I'm already starting to dislike you, man. And he said, I'm interested in character and plot. Thank you for that. You just have to go and punch a sheep. Quite often the plots of the stories are not something happens externally, there'll be something has happened or something is happening emotionally. I get quite touchy if people define that as like a non-plot, because my experience of being alive would be that the things that happen to me internally are quite interesting to me. And a man walks into a room and a gun goes off is not inherently interesting unless you know him or why he's doing it or who he shoots or, you know, you just excitement for the sake of excitement is British television. You know, to have some kind of emotional impact. Not that I'm the perfect model of anything, but I mean, with it, short stories are very, very flexible. They're a very flexible form. You can do anything. They can be very photographic, or they can be very plotty, or, you know, very anything. That's the closest to like a sort of concept album book of short stories, in that I wanted it all to be about people who'd been annihilated by something. So. That kind of gives it a shape that will be quite interior and quite past tense, really, because they've all been sort of hit by a truck and are staggering about bleeding.
It did remind me of that, I think, Virginia Woolf's thing of that, the endless and then and then and then. Mm. And I really thought that you're, with this collection, you're trying to avoid the and then and then and then.
Yeah, I don't even
there's
get
a kind
then.
Of then and
yeah.
then.
There's
and
no
then
and
there's the what
really
becomes.
Either. Yeah,
it's just, it's just the. The gap. Yeah.
But I mean, I have no theory, you know, I could make up modern, it's probably not convincing theoretical answers. I don't really work with a theory. I just...
This is the way you write?
Well, things appear and you write them down, and if you're very lucky, you get paid for it.
it's very lucky.
It is horribly that simple.
Okay, let's throw it out to the audience. Who's got a question? Gab's right there.
Well, just wondering, you've written some collections of short stories, you've also written some novels, and you've also written some non-fiction. So I was really just wondering, when an idea starts to form, how do you, do you know it's a short story, do you know it's going to be a novel, how do you decide what you're going to be doing next?
Yeah, it's kind of like any other form of expression, you know, going about your everyday life, you know if you're going to chat to a shopkeeper or scream in agony because you just, you know, you kind of, there's an appropriate form for whatever you want to say, which might be ow, or might be get the fuck out of my way, or, you know, hello. And you get used to sort of how things feel, what kind of length they seem to imply, I did get it massively wrong with the original Bliss, because I thought that was a short story, and it was a novella. Just even more difficult to sell.
Yeah, I bet your agent was delighted.
We just pretended it was a short story. So in Britain it's a short story, and everywhere else it's a very short novel. So they just jumped away from the N word, but in two different directions. But no, things kind of indicate. Occasionally there are things that you could do in one way and in another way, in which case I do dreadfully cannibalise myself. But just then the demands of the form tend to, you know, I've just done a radio play. And because it's radio, obviously, the visual element is quite lacking. and I'd quite like to make it as a film, because it would be completely different and much longer and more expensive.
You want to spend that money.
Yeah.
Just to pick up on something that you just said about the what becomes being like a concept album. Mm. In that respect, and every single story you have, they are connected. Is it that you collect together a number of stories that you wrote, or did you start out with a plan to write these kind of things, and hoped against hope that something would come along that would give you the and then, you know, that your original idea would go ahead?
Actually, it was an unusual one. I think because I did two. I normally do short story, novel, short story, novel, short story, novel, and I didn't. I did novel, novel, short story, so it'd been a long time. So I had a big bucket of ideas that I hadn't had time to. So they'd been cooking for a long time and speaking to each other and touching each other and infecting each other in a way they don't normally. But the first story, the title story, was chronologically the first one written, and it immediately suggested that title, and that title immediately suggested that project, which it's not normally that clear. But I think that's partly a symptom of having a long time between jolts of short story.
Okay. Any other questions from the audience? I'm sure somebody's got something else to say. Yep, just there. I think just in case people didn't hear, the question was, how did you learn to perform like that as a writer, I guess?
No, this is almost the only place that I haven't failed to get into as a drama student. didn't even try. I got turned on to language by theatre, so I was a theatre studies and drama student, which I think is a very good way to learn to be a writer. Because you understand the physicality of language, and you see its effect on people immediately. You see that you can, by making a noise, do something to somebody that you don't know, and you're not even touching, which is just really nice. and you don't get that immediacy, but you can understand that. I think if you believe in the power. That's will sustain you through the endless rejections and the ridiculousness and just the dark night of the soul and not earning any money for 15 years and just, I remember walking home, I bought two really, croissant had come to Glasgow, it was a very exciting day. And we'd made them twice as big and sweet because, they're not quite unhealthy enough, they're just really fatty. But add sugar and made them bigger and drippier. And I bought two of them and I think they cost 32 pence. It was very, it was a lot of money. And they fell out of the paper bag because it was raining and the bag disintegrated and then they were on the ground. And I picked them up and took them home and dried them out under the grill. And I just thought, oh, my life is shit. Why am I doing this?
Would you do that now?
Yes. Waste bread.
Yeah.
I can't even remember where that was going. But yeah, there were things that I really liked about performing. Almost all of which you can get with, actually very little of which you can get with reading, but there's a different satisfaction in it. It is nice working with other people. That's the sense. I mean, I was doing some voice work actually with writing students last year, and this woman said, you know, I don't like my voice, which most people don't. If you hear a recording of your voice, they all go. If you think about it, that it's impossible. That's unsustainable. You have to like the sound of your own voice because you're going to live with it in there, and you're imposing it upon somebody else who could be thinking about, you know, the best night's sex they ever had, or, you know, a wonderful holiday in the Algarve, or whatever. And you're sitting in their head and spitting your secondhand thoughts into their lobes. So you kind of have to believe that you have something to offer. You also have, obviously, a duty to make it as beautiful as possible, because otherwise you're intruding really intimately, and it's wrong, and a waste of everybody's time. But I think understanding language, writers tend to be very cerebral. We get horrible back problems because we stuff our emotions, and you sit like that. And hopeless, we're not designed for it. We're designed for swinging through trees. We have not evolved quickly enough to deal with typing for a living. It's good to do voice work. So I have a voice coach, would you believe?
I think that the story that you've just read is an utterly different experience read on the page than it is out loud. Things that didn't seem funny were hilarious when you read them, and vice versa. The tone of the story was very different. So I think that what you're just talking about in terms of thinking, like a poet, like a bard in a way, does seem to feed into the work. And the rest of the collection, I want you to take you home and read what becomes bit by bit, evening by evening. Can you do that for me?
I could, and that's much nicer than somebody once said, I can't read you in bed because I can hear your voice. Thank you. So, not that I'm suggesting you want me to do that. Okay. But I mean, you can go too far the wrong way. Obviously, there are things that work perfectly well on the page, but you wouldn't read them out because they're too dense, or people would have to concentrate too much. There are certain things, you know, it's very easy to read out things that are funny because audiences like laughing. It's a positive thing, and you know, but you couldn't let that distort your work, and it has to work on the page because I can't be running around reading them to everybody. I almost do, actually. I read about, that's the other thing, I read about once, if you average it out, I read once or twice a week and have been doing so for years, and after a while just doing that starts you off doing it. But I think it is a good thing to do because it's a musical form. It isn't marks on paper. All of the language that you use to describe language is musical. It's a collaboration of whatever the person's interior voice is and whatever voice you can impose, and the interaction between your voice and the character's voice. It's all voice. And if you don't get your voice sorted, hey, however you want to, you know. Lots of writers are not physically active people and they don't want to do that kind of stuff. I'm a running up and down, wanting to jump and shout over enthusiastic person. So I'm like, you know, you've got to do whatever satisfies you. But I think it's an issue you have to address because it isn't paper pulp with little black marks on it. If it was, you'd have a totally different interaction with it. But I think if you can make it sing, it'll help. Whether it's going with or against the story, it will just penetrate more. And that's the whole gig, is to kind of scoop out the inside of other people and sit in them, using them as meat puppets. But we're not allowed to say that.
I think you just did.
Because that sounds quite wrong.
Any other questions? One there. Maggie.
I'm just wondering, the story you just read was wonderful. There was a slightly rambling quality to it, which you pulled together in the end, all these interesting themes, which made the humour seem a lot more serious. And I was just wondering, when you start to write a story, you obviously have an idea.
Not necessarily the last line, but you begin to be able. It's a through time thing. I'm a big rewriter still, anyway. But you begin to hear the things that sound as if, oh, that's useful for later. Obviously, you want it to seem organic. You can't think, oh, it would be a beautiful metaphor to have a dog coughing on a wall and then to hammer the dog coughing and it makes somebody look like a dog and he doesn't, and clearly there's no reason for him to cough and it's all dreadful. So hopefully it's generated from the thing. But yeah, it's slightly a style of writing, and up to a point it can irritate me and I can end up being a pastiche of myself, so you have to kind of push it on. But I think the idea is to have things to resonate, and I mean I wouldn't want to just write a story that was just funny, because that would be simply enjoyable. And there has to be a bit more oomph, really. Partly just because the funniest things are the worst things we laugh at.
How much truth was there in the story you're telling us
about? I have had a lot of dental mishaps. Look at them. You can't see them because they're invisible, but I currently have braces on both sets of my teeth. So that's a source of excruciating pain, even if I have no others. Just because I'm tired of looking like somebody who sits on a porch and plays a banjo.
Okay, Chris, I think you had a question.
There seems to me to be a number of Scottish women who skip quietly from genre to genre and are brilliant in all of them. There's you, there's Abby Smith, there's Kate Clancy, who's ridiculously talented and has just decided to write short stories which are ridiculously good. Do you think there's sort of something about being Scottish that enables them to skip so definitely from medium to medium?
And how do you become Scottish? That's a question for that.
For a small fee, we can arrange for you all to become Scottish. I should just say yes, yes, we're racially superior. We have Andy Murray and David Tennant, and actually everyone's like that. We disguise them all by making them look fat and pale and ugly. Miserable. I don't know. I mean, it is slightly jokily that we have an oral culture more, so you do experience your work in two different forms more often, and that might lead to you thinking of it from a different angle, but I seriously don't know. I mean, partly it's just because it allows you to earn money if you do a bajillion different things. But partly for me, it's greed. I don't know about the others. It's fun, you know. Somebody will let you do that as well as that, as well as that, as well as that. You know, it's a blast. I mean, I don't get to do all of them all at once. But I mean, you know, in December I was sitting in a radio studio having my words come out of Bill Nye. I mean, fucking hell. You could give him a phone book and it would sound pretty good. It's like you're making me cry. And I wrote this. I know it's rubbish.
And you got to make James Bond look really evil as well.
I did. And the only time I met him, I'd just seen the film again. And he came up and went, you know, was a bit, not lovey, but just, way. And I was like, you filthy child trafficking pimp. The performance was so convincing that I didn't mean to punch it. I'm sorry. When the boot comes in. No, and I mean Kelly MacDonald. So, you know, you work with these amazing people who are like professional meat puppets. They are just so, you know, and they go. They're the best readers. So that, you know, that's to blow up a car. We blew up a car in that film. And I sat next to my editor in a screening of it. I just turned to him and said, can't do that in a novel. you know, they did the complete cliched running away from a big fireball shot. But, they're all satisfying. And the lack of control that you get in some is beautiful if you're giving the control to people who are, you know, going to take it somewhere else. And the enormous control in a novel is great because everything's your fault and you're supposed to be in control. But, you know, the novel helps. Why not? You're just telling stories. A lot of the demarcations of form are to do with people who like to put things in boxes. And I like to stand on boxes and let things run all over the floor.
And I think that's a fantastic place to leave it. Let's run all over the floor. We're going to have a break now. Thank you very much. Fantastic performance, Greg Cunet. And come back after the break and buy books.